Coleman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with five-star service. Caroline Fenton joined by Mark Howard filling in for Jared Stillman today. We just wrapped up the TD Power Hour with Teron Davenport, who will be heading to Seattle this weekend. So make sure to check out his coverage of Titans Seahawks on Sunday. Titans come in back to Seattle to try and get their first win on the docket this season. And then one topic that we have covered so heavily this week is Julio Jones and Mike Vrabel's comments about doing dumb stuff that hurts the team. Was it a call out to Julio Jones? Mike Vrabel himself said, no, it wasn't. I didn't think it was. Mark, you didn't think it was. TD didn't think it was a call out. But one thing that we have talked about so intently this week is Mike Vrabel's intentions were not to call out Julio Jones, but how would he take that? This is Julio's first year on the Titans, not necessarily used to Mike Vrabel's communication with the media, the way that he speaks. But TD said, hey, no, it won't be a problem. Julio's been around the block long enough that he hears something like that from a coach and he won't take it the wrong way. Mark, your thoughts on that?
Well, a couple of things. And I'm saying this sort of flying blind. Mm-hmm. I'm just taking an educated guess. And that is that, first of all, Vrabel wouldn't have said it before he told Julio. And I think there was a purpose for that. And I just feel like, you know, he wouldn't say that if he felt like it was going to burn a bridge or was going to create an issue. And I've said, I think Vrabel at times is guilty of creating unnecessary drama, like having a shadow defensive coordinator last year and just refusing to admit that. That was ridiculous. But something like this, and Vrabel is very, very sensitive, you know, to the pulse of his locker room. So he's not going to say anything, that's going to blow that up. So I'm sure, even though what he said sounds harsh, if you break it down, it's not that big a deal. I mean, if that's the worst thing he can say about Julio, and I'm sure Julio would tell you it was a stupid penalty. That doesn't make him stupid. He just, wasn't his best moment.
See, and that's the only thing that I worry about is I'm with you. I don't think that Mike Vrabel would say or do anything as in a gossipy way to the media that he wouldn't say to Julio's face, that he wouldn't say to any other player on that team. Because I was saying, Mike Vrabel has said that phrase before. I wouldn't be surprised if it's plastered up in the locker room in big, bold letters. Don't do dumb stuff to hurt the team, because it's a pretty fair message. You're a professional football player. You're paid to go out on the field and help this football team. So don't do stupid things to hurt
it. Julio Jones was hardly the only person who made a stupid play out there. I just think it sort of illustrated the point that as badly as some guys played, as many bad plays, that existed out there, from players who were normally better, you can't beat yourself. That was self-inflicted, and that stuff drives coaches crazy.
Oh, absolutely. But and we talk so much about the way that Mike Vrabel speaks to his team, because I think more than maybe any other coach in the league, Vrabel's in that tier of coaches that is absolutely a player's coach through and through. He was a player. He's not that far removed from being a player. He has a very hands-off approach with his team. But the way that he speaks to his team and the way that he communicates with his players, I think, makes a huge impact.
Well, I think that he knows how to send a message. And I think he understands that sometimes you can say something provocative to the media, and it's just chin music aimed at the guys in the locker room. I said it before and I'll say it again. I think it was him just telling his players, listen, none of you guys are immune to criticism, even the big stars like Julio Jones. And I think when players know that, they understand that Vrabel's not going to play favorites. Yeah, he's going to give the veterans some preferential treatment because they've earned it. But he's going to call out anybody who's not getting with the program. And so that one, I didn't even think twice about.
And I fully believe that. I fully believe that Mike Vrabel had no bad intentions going into that comment. My only worry is the way that Julio, digests it. Because I hear TD, I hear him saying, you know, he's been in the league long enough. He is a product of Nick Saban. I'm sure Nick Saban is no stranger to criticizing a player when they absolutely need it. But the only thing that makes me worry, the only thing that makes me wonder if Julio Jones maybe did take that the wrong way, is Keyshawn Johnson on First Take the other day said that, you know, if he said that, if a coach said that about me, we would have been scrapping. I would have been fighting him. And that was something that never even came to my mind as a possibility for a player to even think is, hey, a coach calls me out for making, not even me, a coach answers a question implying the fact that I did something dumb, in which he did. It wasn't even a thought in my mind that that could possibly rub a player such a wrong way that he would want to fight his coach. So that's the only thing that makes me concerned is Keyshawn Johnson, a guy who was a wide receiver in the league, a guy who did make a ton of money in the league just as Julio Jones is now, that was his perspective of it.
Yeah, and Keyshawn wasn't always the most coachable either. So.
That's true. Give me the damn ball.
Throw
me the damn ball. That's what it is.
And Julio came here with a totally opposite point of view. You know, it's throw me the ball when you want to. I'll be here. So let's see. Give him a few more games, and then we can make our summary judgment on Julio Jones. But he did not have a sterling debut with the Titans.
And we talk a lot about the way that Mike Vrabel communicates with his team. And I think more than any other team in the league, the Titans can bounce back from low and go high, or maybe be super high and go low, like any other team I've ever seen. And Mike Vrabel, the Patriots team in 2003, week one, didn't even score a point against the Buffalo Bills, lose 31-0 to the Buffalo Bills. I mentioned Vrabel being very much so a player's coach because he was there. Not very long ago, he was there in that position going down 0-1 to start the season in a bad loss against Buffalo. We talk about the way that Mike Vrabel speaks to his team. Do you think that bringing that player's perspective, bringing his history as a player, he's going to talk to his team about that? He's going to bring that up and say, look, we could win the Super Bowl after going down 0-1 in a nasty loss in week one, and so can this team.
Yeah, I don't think he does anything without considering how it impacts his players. And that's why, through the course of a season, he'll give them days off. I mean, he's a big load management guy. Mm-hmm. And that essentially tells you he's a player's coach, if that even exists anymore. You know, the days of the authoritarian coach, even in the NFL, doesn't work anymore. You know, you can't come in like Vince Lombardi. Mm-hmm. And do what he did. You've got to know how to communicate. It's about building relationships. And I think Vrabel has that on this team. Not everybody agrees with what he does. And, you know, we've heard things. But really, you know, for the most part, he remembers his time as a player, and he tries to coach accordingly. Not that, you know, he's going to roll over for these guys, but you know, he understands how grueling the season can be and the need to be relatively fresh at the end. But also, a big thing with Vrabel is accountability. And when something like that happens, he wants the players held accountable.
And I think it's amazing the way that the Titans can, you know, when everything is counted against them, whenever it's very much so the world versus me mentality, that's when the Titans perform best. And I do think that that is partially a product of Mike Vrabel, of this mentality, this kind of blue collar mentality of, I don't need anyone to believe in me. I don't need anyone to cheer me on, because we can go out there and do it because we know that this team is capable of that.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Mark and I will get into a little bit of some Titans overreactions. I'll state something, maybe something that we've heard throughout the week after this week one or leading into week two against Seattle. So he will tell me if he thinks that's an overreaction or that's a pretty fair reaction given the circumstances. So we will get into all of that coming up next. You are listening to Stillman & Company, and we are live on 102.5 The Game, streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and the Game Nashville app.
Mike, you got blown out in the first game of a season when you were a player and ended up winning the Super Bowl. Kyle, what did you take away from that experience, and is there anything you can share with the team in that regard?
Well, I mean, I think that I'm not going to try to get into that right now with the team. I mean, we need to focus on us, but that it's a long season, you know, that you have to continue to improve. Whether you win or lose, you got to move on to the next game, make the corrections, try to recognize how important we believe the keys are. You know, we talk about turnovers minus two. We talk about quarterback efficiency, you know, 122 to 75. And we talk about running the football and stopping the run. It was, you know, whatever it was, 130 to 89. So there it is right there. Pretty clear. That's why we didn't have success yesterday.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel talking about turning the page. Look, you know, Sunday's over. We're looking at Seattle.
Well, and the one stat that he brought up, turnover differential.
Mm-hmm.
Titans led the NFL in that last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always the feeling that they were a candidate for regression because that's a hard stat to control. You just it just seems to fluctuate
mm-hmm.
year by year. And already they're minus two. So it'll be interesting to see where that number lands by the end of the season and the cause and effect it has on their one loss record.
I think also, too, when you're playing these teams like Seattle, I wouldn't have even put Arizona in that category pre-week one, but I guess, you know, we saw it now. These teams are going to capitalize on your turnovers. If they get any option, or if they get any opportunity, rather, to get the ball, they're going to capitalize on it, and they're going to score. And if your offense can't get anything moving, and if you're turning the ball over, then that is an absolute recipe for disaster. So Mike Vrabel seems like he is the king of leaving the past in the past and looking forward to the next task ahead. And for the Tennessee Titans, that is the Seattle Seahawks. So, Mark, I have a few things, a few statements. Now, full disclosure, I don't necessarily believe these things, but these are some things that have been floating around Titans Twitter, throughout Titans discussion boards, throughout sports talk radio, some people saying certain things. So I want you to determine, in your opinion, are they overreactions to week one? Slow down. It is just one game. There are 16 games left, and the Titans have a lot of time to turn things around. Or is it fair to say, was it bad enough in week one that you could say that, and it's a fair concern moving forward? So we'll get into it. Mark, in your opinion, overreaction or fair to say? Now, this is something that Jared and I have gone back and forth on over the past couple of days, and we were both pretty adamant about our respective stances. I got Joe Rexroad's opinion. I want to hear your opinion as well. Overreaction or fair to say? The Titans regret the Julio trade.
Overreaction. It's one
Thank
week.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, good
That's
grief.
What I said. That's what I said. I've said it is one week. You cannot say that they regret the trade. You can say that you are unhappy with Julio's production in week one. You can say that he made a stupid mistake in week one that cost the team 15 yards. You can say game one in a Titan uniform was probably a small splotch on his career. But you to say that you regret trading for Julio Jones one game in? Ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Asinine. Thank you very much.
You know,
it's another tally in my column. Woohoo!
You know, these new sportsbook apps, these websites, you know, that you can get in the state of Tennessee, allows you to buy out of a game a lot of times.
They do.
At a reduced price.
Mm-hmm.
So say you bet $25 on the Titans last Sunday. And when they got down maybe 7-0, you could buy out of your bet for like maybe half.
Mm-hmm.
You lose half your bet. And yeah, you know, that would have turned
Rather
out
than
to
losing
be a good
everything.
Play.
Right.
But you know, you start bailing all the time on your team after a bad game, then you're not gonna have anybody left.
Exactly. And like TD said, give it a few weeks. Give it, you know, to week four, you have enough tests, you've had enough road tests, you've had enough road games, you have your legs underneath you, give it some time. Overreaction or fair to say, Taylor Lewan will not get a contract extension at the end of this season.
It's ridiculous. Again, one game. Good grief. I mean, I want to tell you something. There are some hanging judges here. Remember the Aaron Rodgers? Relax. Just relax. You look at his body of work, it sort of indicates that he'll be okay. But he wasn't very good last week, and I'll be the first to say it. But I don't think he's I don't think he's done.
And hoot at to that. I mean, we mentioned earlier, TD said, you know, give it 4 weeks before you really know exactly what this team is, what their identity is, who a player is. Now, Taylor Lewan, if he performs every week like that, he's not getting a contract extension. What do you think?
He wouldn't even have a job.
No.
I mean, you know.
No. So. What do you think is kind of the standard that both Taylor Lewan and Julio Jones need to reach for it to be like, okay, now we can justify this trade, or Taylor, you know, we're signing you on for a one-year deal, whatever it may be?
Well, I mean, Julio Jones is an impact player. He gave up a lot for him.
Yeah.
And he's still, he might not be, you know, at the height of his career, you know, but he's...
But the Titans knew that going into it.
Yeah, but I mean, he's certainly not, I hope... Over the hill, he could. It's possible, but it doesn't seem likely. And that's the danger of trading for a once great receiver who's 31 now,
mm-hmm.
and encroaching on 32. But now, I mean, you expect Julio Jones to perform at a very high level, and you expect Taylor Lewan to perform at basically a Pro Bowl level.
Mm-hmm. Overreaction, or fair to say, Derrick Henry will not go back-to-back 2,000-plus yard rushing seasons.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
That just, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there are going to be weeks where teams are really going to sell out to stop him. And I think he's going to have some, he might have some tough weeks. Now, if he ends up with 1,500 yards, that's still pretty good.
And that's what I was going to say.
Even with 17 games.
Like, there's a reason why he's the only person to ever do it, because it's pretty darn hard to do.
They weren't blocking anybody. I don't care how good a running back you are. You're just not going to get much. They were not only blocking, they not only weren't blocking anybody, but Arizona was getting penetration. I mean, you're asking Derrick Henry to run into a brick wall.
If he has three or four 400-pound, 300-pound defensive linemen pushing up against him, I don't really know how much you expect him to do. And I think that people, by now, defensive coordinators have caught on to exactly what Derrick Henry can do. So, to your point, if Derrick Henry gets 1,500 rushing yards, it's not like he's washed up. That's still a pretty damn good running back. Overreaction, or fair to say, either Todd Downing, Shane Bowen, or both will get replaced in the middle of the season.
I doubt it. That's not the way Vrabel rolls. Keith Carter had a terrible first year, or not a great first year, as offensive line coach, and Vrabel stuck with him. I don't see it. You never say never. I don't know how this manifests itself, but. No, I think that Vrabel will call Downing into his office at some point, I hope, and say, you know what? Tannehill's pretty good in play action. You might not like it, but we do. And Downing seems like a reasonably intelligent guy. Maybe he'll pick up on that.
I have some more statements for you to decide if they're overreactions or fair to say. But before we do that, we'll go to your phone lines. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought. But for now, we will go to Adam on the defense.
So I'm curious, is there any chance our defense doesn't just suck really bad? Because it's Kyler Murray runs like a 4-3, 4-4, doesn't he? He's a quarterback, so... It seemed like they were getting close, like really close a couple of times, and I feel like if it was any other quarterback, they would have got to him. So, I don't know. I'm nervous about what this week looks like, but I'm also kind of optimistic because I feel like any other scenario that they could actually be good. They could be good and we don't even know it.
Well, Kyler Murray, it's not just his 40 speed. It's his athleticism and elusiveness. And that's something you can't coach that – That's something that doesn't necessarily always come with speed, but that's what you're facing.
And to the caller's point, and we appreciate your call, Adam, I don't think the Titans' defense looked absolutely atrocious. I mean, it wasn't great. It's not necessarily a game that I think Shane Bowen wants to hang his hat on. But I don't think it was anything that would make Titans fans say, oh my gosh, it is 2020 all over again.
No, I don't think you can go there yet.
No.
I don't know. It almost felt like they had a little bit of the game plan that they used to kind of corral Lamar Jackson as far as not overcommitting, right, and trying to keep him corralled in there, not letting him get out and run.
And he's tough to cover because if you go on him too hard, he's running. And, he's a runner. He's a track star.
And not only that, but he is a much better thrower than Lamar Jackson. And so he does a lot more scrambling to pass than Lamar does more of scrambling to run. And so, and Kyler Murray can just throw at crazy arm angles. He has great arm talent. So I think, you know, to Adam's point, I don't, as long as Kyler stays healthy and stays within their offense, I think he's going to have, there's a lot of people who project that Kyler's going to have some big numbers this year if he can stay healthy. And I just think that goes to his talent. You know, he's just, not only is he fast and super elusive, but he can just throw much better than some of these other running quarterbacks, I think.
Yeah, you do make a good point there, because I do think he has a better arm than Lamar, because you shut down Lamar's run game, he doesn't really have as much to offer. And with Kyler, I think what we saw, that QB scramble that he had, I mean, that showed off just how aware he is, his quickness, his speed, and also his ability to read his own offense and his arm game as well.
Yeah, he makes some great throws on the run.
He does.
He can run, extend the play, and not only does he have a strong arm, but he's pretty accurate on the run.
Running to his right. Especially, running to his left, a little bit different.
Yeah, I guess maybe he did throw that interception. He was a little bit to the left on that one interception.
When he's
got to
throw across his, when he's got to throw against his body.
Right.
That's difficult for anybody, but for a guy like Murray especially. But, running to his right, he's lethal.
I mean, he made some throws that not many quarterbacks can make. Like, you know, Tannehill can't make some of those throws.
Right.
You know, the fact, not only is he running extremely fast, but he's throwing on the run, strong arm, pretty accurate. So I think he's going to give a lot of teams headaches this year, to Adam's point, and it might not be a fair barometer for the defense. We'll see. Russell Wilson is similar. He doesn't have as strong as an arm, but he might.
I do think Kyler's quicker than
I do too.
Than Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see if they, you know, worry more about the running, or if they worry more about, you know, let Russell run and worry about more of the passing ability. We'll have to see. I don't know.
Right. Well, Russell is a phenomenal football player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was always the thing when he was at North Carolina State. You had Mike Lennon, who's built like every, you know, is built like what every GM dreams of in a quarterback, with the height and, you know, in terms of a pocket passer and all that. And then you got a much smaller Russell Wilson running around. He was a better football player, and he's remained that with Seattle.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to some quick texts before we go to the break. But Trent texts in to the text line. Phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and said, Jared said Kyler Murray was too short to be a good quarterback. Jared's not very high on Kyler Murray. Now, do I think that he deserves as much praise in the national media as he gets? Probably not. But I do think that what we saw from Kyler Murray against the Titans on Sunday was something that it was a level that Kyler Murray hadn't reached yet, because I think each year in Kyler Murray's career, he's been able to grow a little bit. His rookie season, it wasn't great, but in his second year, he, you know, he learned to scramble a little bit. He learned to avoid getting sacked, I think, in year but his arm strength was still a little bit of a concern. He relied heavily on his legs, and I think this year you might be seeing that arm strength getting up a little bit.
Well, barring a guy is like 5'4" or 5'6" or whatever, I think height has become less emphasized around the NFL, given, you know, the new offenses, you know, where you want a mobile quarterback, where you want your guy to move around. So I think that's mitigated by his playmaking ability. So I don't think GMs were scared off at all by his like or lack thereof. You know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, isn't exactly a giant. And he's doing okay.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, I will share with Mark the three things that I'm worried about for the Seahawks game and three things that I'm really not so worried about, three things that I think Titans could have an advantage with. So before we get into that, you should know that tomorrow it is your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Saturday, you win a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate tomorrow morning at 9:45 a.m. You're listening to Stillman & Company. We are live on 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and the Game Nashville app. Live stream sponsored by our friends at the law offices of Amanda Gentry.
You assess Bud Dupree's play this past Sunday. Is that, speaking of fine lines, tough sometimes when you got a guy coming off of an ACL, first game action in a while?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think first time really getting into it where it's 100% full go to the ground, the whole shebang. I do think it's a little, there's an adjustment period, right? But I think he'll keep improving. I think the him getting more comfortable with what we're doing defensively, right, and his role and the style. And, I mean, it's tough too, man. You're dealing with a Kyler Murray type player, so that kind of plays into it a little bit schematically and just individually. I think that is in their mind a little bit too. But I do hope to see improvement as this thing goes and he gets more adjusted to actually getting back out there.
That was Titans defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, talking about Bud Dupree, kind of taking a slowly but surely approach with Bud Dupree coming back from an ACL injury, calling it kind of an adjustment period. And Ian and I were talking at the break about, is there a certain level of load management here with Bud Dupree? You're bringing him in, paying him $16 million. He's coming off of an ACL tear. You don't want to push him too hard, but he was kind of brought in to save this defense, to be the pass rush the Titans lacked last season.
I think he played, 28 snaps?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'd have to look that up.
That sounds, yeah.
But whatever the case, I think a lot of people felt like that was maybe too many. Given his situation. So you wonder if they'll be a little more sensitive to that this Sunday.
Maybe be a little bit more careful, of course, because, I mean, you're signed to Bud Dupree long-term. You know, he's worth way more to you for, let's say, 15, 20 snaps a game, yeah, rather than not at all. But, Mark, I have three things that worry me about this Seattle Seahawks game, and three things that do not necessarily, three things that I think could possibly be used to the Titans' advantage, and I want your thoughts on them. First and foremost, the three things that worry me. Number one, the Seahawks' high-powered offense. Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Chris Carson. I mean, that's an intimidating offense right there. And I think what we saw from the Titans defense, and as we said in the last segment, it does seem improved from 2020, but that doesn't necessarily say a ton. So this high-powered offense gives me a little bit of worry. Any defense that has a tough time stopping Kyler Murray and giving up 38 points to the Arizona Cardinals in week one makes you worried about going into Seattle and stopping one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, you break it down. As I mentioned, Russell Wilson completed passes to seven different receivers, completed 78% of his throws, and looked as good as he ever has in a Seattle uniform. That should send off alarm bells. Not only at St. Thomas Sports Park, but all over the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Second thing that I'm worried about, and I don't think that this is dramatic at all, and I think that everyone that watched that Titans game on Sunday is a little bit worried about this, but the Titans offensive line. You know, Taylor Lewan tweeted, "Thank you, Chandler Jones, for giving me the kick in the butt that I needed." Did Taylor Lewan get the kick in the butt he needed? Now, I think that Taylor Lewan's ceiling is far above what he showed us on Sunday. But I think that this game is going to be very telling for Taylor Lewan. How can he bounce back after a poor game one?
Well, keep the rushers off the quarterback,
mm-hmm,
for starters. I think that's the most important thing. And I'm sure that is for Taylor. You know, he wants to keep his quarterback upright. And we'll see how he does here.
And the Seattle defensive line is nothing to scoff at. In their game against Indianapolis last week, Jonathan Taylor was held to 3 yards per carry. And I think Jonathan Taylor has a very bright future in this league. I don't think that he is a running back where it's typical that he would get just 3 yards per carry. Seattle sacked Carson Wentz 3 times. And that makes you worried with this offensive line that allowed the quarterback to get sacked 5. It had 10 quarterback hits. So this Titans offensive line needs to, no pun intended, seriously tighten up from what we saw week 1.
Well, what scares you about Seattle is not only what they did, but how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You had a bunch of defensive linemen all credited with 1 sack. You have Rasheem Green and Benson Maioa, who also matched Darrell Taylor, former Tennessee Vol, mm-hmm. with a sack and 2 quarterback hits. But you also had Kerry Hyder, Carlos Dunlap, Puna Ford, all credited with a quarterback hit. So when you have that kind of depth in your D-line, and don't forget former Titan Al Woods is on this D-line rotation, that makes it difficult. That's a headache. But the Titans have to look inward and make sure they have their act together before going in.
The third thing that makes me a little bit worried about this Seattle game, and I think that this may be a worry that's not exclusive to the Seahawks game. I think this may be a season-long thing for the Titans, is the Titans kicking game. Obviously, Michael Badgley, the money badger, didn't work out so great on Sunday. Now the Titans rely on Randy Bullock, so also a Ryan Tannehill college teammate, but he is 83. He's completed, or he's made 83% of his field goals since entering the league in 2013. He was 80.8% with the Bengals in 2020 after his long stint with the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know what you make of that. The Titans kicking game has obviously been a concern for way longer than it has needed to be. And that wasn't going to be the difference between a win and a loss for the Titans this past Sunday against the Cardinals, but it very well could come down to an extra point to a field goal moving forward. So that is a concern for me, not just in week 2, but for each of the 17 weeks.
Yeah, I'd agree that Bullock, seems like he's got a timeshare on the waiver wire. he's been waived so many times. He's played for a lot of teams. He's a hired gun. Titans are just hoping to get at least a few games out of him till Ficken comes back, mm-hmm. hopefully healthy. So right now, it's all hands on deck, and they're going to bring in the best possible street free agent. I don't think they're going to go extravagant. I'm not trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because I didn't think it was going to happen till late in the season. But I think Gostkowski's staying put.
Staying put as in not on the roster?
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's done. I that's just the sense that I get.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of the Titans' cap situation, with the cap being lowered this year, I think it becomes problematic to go out and sign a guy like Gostkowski, a veteran kicker. So a lot of these guys, these hired legs,
mm-hmm.
supposed to hired guns, will come in. And you might see a procession of kickers every week. I don't know. But I think I agree with you that I think the Titans, at least for this week, have put their trust in Bullock.
I mean, it's getting tiring. It's like dating. I'm sick of the Titans dating kickers. I'm ready for them to settle down and just stick to one. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Next, we will get into the 3 things that are a little encouraging to me. Some of the upsides, in my opinion, that Titans could have in week 2. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your calls, get your texts, all of your Titans thoughts. But before we do that, NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub in Cool Springs this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features our very own Mark Howard, former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and Jared Stillman. Join Jared, Mark, and Chris from 1 to 3 p.m. live at Corner Pub in Cool Springs at 9200 Carruthers Parkway prior to the Titans taking on the Seattle Seahawks. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. You are listening to Stillman & Company. We are live on 102.5 The Game and streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and The Game Nashville app.
You individually and the team overall have done a good job bouncing back from, you know, whether it's a subpar game or losses the last couple of years. Is there always just that maybe extra little bit of motivation when you come off a loss, you know, similar to Arizona like this?
I think it's just a mentality. We don't want to have that same result. We know whenever we don't play it to our standards that we have to play better. And you watch the film and you grow from it and come out here and try to get better every day leading up to Sunday.
That was Derrick Henry, of course, with your typical Nick Saban, Mike Vrabel-influenced answer of gotta watch game tape, gonna get better.
Getting the stiff arm.
Exactly. El Tractorcito there. But that's exactly what the Titans have to do, and that's exactly what the Titans have been able to do in the past, is coming off of big-time losses, not letting it carry over into the following week, but truly, as Mike Vrabel said, after Sunday, we turn the page and we fix those issues that we had during the game. We get out in practice, we watch film, and we move on to the next week. That's something that I think Mike Vrabel and the Titans can do almost better than any other team in the NFL, is their ability to carry over into the next week and leave the past week behind them. But in the last segment, I mentioned the three things that I'm a little bit worried about going into Seattle, not only to mention that the Seahawks will have home field advantage, but also the Seahawks' high-powered offense. You know, the Titans have Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, and A.J. Brown. But you know what? The Seahawks have Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Chris Carson. So they have any answer to the Titans' offense. Also, the Titans' offensive line. That looked absolutely abysmal. The Titans offensive line that allowed Ryan Tannehill to get sacked 5 times against the Arizona Cardinals. And also the Titans kicking game. The Titans kicking carousel that is a tale as old as time. It is deja vu all over again. The Titans are looking for a kicker. Now, there are three things, though, that I think that are incredibly encouraging going into this Seahawks game. Number one, this Titans offensive potential. We didn't see it against Arizona. We didn't see, you know, a 50-yard Derrick Henry run. We didn't see a nice deep ball from Ryan Tannehill connecting with either A.J. Brown or Julio Jones. We didn't see what this offense could potentially be. But that's exactly what I think it is offensive potential. I mentioned it earlier. Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry. And if there was any conversation surrounding this offense after the Julio Jones acquisition, it was how in the world our defense is going to stop this offense. Now, Arizona was able to do it. The Titans offense came in looking unpolished. They had another week of practice under their belt. So I think that this Titans offense and the Titans offensive potential is absolutely something the Titans fans can hang their hat on going into Seattle.
Yeah, I think it's going to be better. I just do. Partially because I don't think it can get much worse.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I want to see them with a week under their belts. Again, what will adversity do to this team? As much as anything. You know, they stunk and they acknowledged it. Now they got to do something about it. And I think they realize that if they can win this game, everything from this past Sunday pretty much goes out the window,
mm-hmm.
which is the way it should be. But yeah, you know, that's going to be their way of turning the page, is to win that next game.
The second thing that I think is a little bit encouraging for Titans fans, the Seahawks secondary versus the Titans wide receiver. So I totally understand that Jamal Adams wears the Seahawks uniform, and he's one of the best safeties in the league. He's one of the highest paid safeties in the league. But last week against the Indianapolis Colts, Carson Wentz was able to complete almost 66% of his passes for nearly 260 yards and 2 touchdowns. So I think that the Titans wide receivers absolutely outmatch whatever Indianapolis has in their backfield. So I think that this passing game is going to be key because Seattle is incredibly fierce up front. But if the Titans are able to get that passing game going, I think that these Titans wide receivers can outmatch the Seahawks secondary.
Yeah, you know, and Trey Flowers and DJ Reed are the primary corners for Seattle. But I'll tell you what, Jamal Adams is going to be used as a blitzer.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that you'd want to talk about a, you know, a headache. It's going to be exponentially tougher.
He's essentially a linebacker that wears a different hat.
Well, yeah, it possibly. But, you know, for lack of a better term, I mean, he has become, you know, a guy that has sort of changed the air in that room. Seattle made a big investment, gave up a lot of draft picks, and this guy is a real talent.
Another thing that's very encouraging, my third and final thing, is the Titans' history of bouncing back after a bad loss. In Mike Vrabel's tenure as a Titans head coach, after double-digit losses, he is 7-0. The Titans have not lost under Mike Vrabel after double-digit loss ever. So I think that's incredibly encouraging for Titans fans to know that this team, unlike any other team in the league probably, is able to come back after a bad loss, like we mentioned, turn the page, look ahead to this next week. And when we've said it several times on this show, and I think a lot of other people have reiterated that remark, that they would not be that surprised if the Titans walk into Seattle and get a win.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, the way the point spread is out, I think it's 5.5, 6.
Which isn't as big of a point spread as I expected.
I think it's an overreaction. I think it's an absolute.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
I think it should be 4.
I see. I expected the sports book to totally overreact and set it at like 10.5.
No, that wasn't going to happen.
That's what I thought it would be, just coming off of such a big loss after looking not so great in week one. I thought that people were going to eat up a really wide spread.
No. That happens in basketball a lot, but.
It does.
I think they're going to go up there and play well.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. History tells me that's what's going to happen. If they have another stinker like this last Sunday, you know, then that's going to be on them. And they're going to start getting hammered in this town because it's an expectant fan base. There was a lot of anticipation leading into last Sunday's game. And now they're embarked on one of their tough games of the season. And this is going to be sort of, you know, let's see what you're made of.
And I think, too, I mean, starting the season 0-2, obviously, is not the ideal way to start a season, especially with so much hype going into your team going into the season. But I'm still not going to let that sway my thoughts about what I think the upside of this team can be, what the ceiling this team can be. Obviously not ideal, but like we said, I mean, 7-0 coming off of double-digit losses. History shows that the Titans are able to bounce back very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get into some headlines with Caroline coming up next. You are listening to Stillman & Company, and we are live on 102.5 The Game.